there is a major added headache. The standard calculations assume that the share of emissions that is taken up by the sinks of land and ocean, and the share that reaches the atmosphere, will remain relatively constant over time. Yet there are feedback effects on the greenhouse gas budgets that could be phenomenally important. For example, as the Earth warms, the icy tundra in the far northern hemisphere will start to thaw. As the tundra ice melts, it is possible that vast amounts of carbon and methane will be released from the soils, leading to a massive positive feedback effect. Similarly, warming of the oceans could release vast amounts of CO2 and methane, now dissolved in the water or trapped in deep-sea ice formations, known as methane hydrates. It is possible that temperate zone forests and soils will become better sinks for the CO2, thereby becoming a negative feedback. But it is also possible that a warming of the mid-latitude forests and soils will lead to a release of CO2, in which case the forests and soils will become positive feedbacks. Even more subtle effects add to the uncertainty and to the risks. Increased storminess and winds might change ocean patterns and reduce the ability of the oceans to absorb CO2 from the atmosphere. Recent evidence suggests that increased tropospheric ozone in the lower atmosphere, which results from human-induced emissions of nitrous oxides, methane, and carbon monoxide, could damage plants and crop yields and thereby significantly reduce the uptake of carbon dioxide on land. The main conclusion, however, is clear enough and remains robust, as complicated as the analysis becomes. The world is on a trajectory of steeply increasing greenhouse gases, which are likely to lead to a doubling of the pre-industrial concentration of CO2 in a matter of a few decades. Moreover, the rise could be even faster than expected if one or more of the positive feedbacks kick in. And we know from the paleoclimate record that such positive feedbacks abound, even if we are not sure which ones are most likely in our time. Avoiding dangerous anthropogenic interference. The UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, UNFCCC, set the right standard for global action. The treaty is clear and compelling. It starts by acknowledging that change in the Earth's climate and its adverse effects are a common concern of humankind. It then recognizes the scientific underpinning of the challenge. Human activities have been substantially increasing the atmospheric concentrations of greenhouse gases, that these increases enhance the natural greenhouse effect, and that this will result on average in additional warming of the Earth's surface and atmosphere and may adversely affect natural ecosystems and humankind. The treaty then sets the basic objective as follows: to achieve stabilization of greenhouse gas concentrations in the atmosphere at a level that would prevent dangerous anthropogenic interference with the climate system. Wisely, the goal is to stabilize greenhouse gas concentrations rather than merely to slow their increase. Only by stabilizing the concentrations of greenhouse gases can we avoid passing climate thresholds of great risk to humanity and the Earth's ecosystems. The key is to translate this goal into quantitative targets and the targets into economic and other policies that can achieve them. Of course, there is inherent ambiguity in the UNFCCC objective, which the treaty makers left to further debate and decision. When the treaty says dangerous, we must ask, dangerous for whom? The hardest hit places in the world? Or the average impact? Or the impact on each and every signatory to the treaty? Do we mean dangerous just for humans, or dangerous for other species as well, such as polar bears, which might be driven to extinction? Do we require that the danger be certain or only likely, and if likely, with what probability? These and related issues have recently been explored in a brilliant analysis by my colleague James Hansen and several co-authors. Hansen's conclusion is that the world is even closer to dangerous anthropogenic interference than we realize. Hansen uses climate modeling and the paleoclimate record to argue that we face several potential thresholds of dangerous risk, including breakup of the ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica, which could lead to massive rises in sea level with profound costs for human settlements along the coasts around the world, increase in extreme weather events, and the extinction of species due to the shift in habitat range. The prevailing view among European policymakers and many scientists has been that a further increase of 2 degrees centigrade above the Earth's current mean temperature would be a threshold of danger, with climate models implying that CO2 should therefore be stabilized at or below 2x CO2, meaning below twice the pre-industrial level. Since the pre-industrial level is 280 parts per million, the recommendation is to prevent CO2 from reaching 560 parts per million, in the range of 450 to 460 parts per million. Hansen takes a more stringent view, since he finds evidence that added global warming of more than 1 degree centigrade above the level in 2000 has effects that may be highly disruptive. If so, the target for stabilization would have to be far more stringent than 2x CO2, and Hansen indeed suggests preventing CO2 from exceeding 450 parts per million,